Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
South Africa starts the week with questions over political accountability, fresh pressure on AI-linked chip stocks, and global leaders heading into a NATO summit shaped by war, oil, and uncertainty. Good morning. This is the BizNews Daybreak. I'm Asime Nyite. Coming up, the latest overnight world news from Bloomberg, Lauren Avanthia on Jacob Zuma's Gupta reunion, Bloomberg on semiconductor stocks sliding as investors question AI spending, Lauren again on President Cyril Ramaphosa's Dina Pule appointment, and Bloomberg on how the Iran war is hanging over the NATO summit in Turkey. We begin with the global picture. First up, our partners at Bloomberg give us the latest overnight world news.
Ukraine says its capital city of Kyiv came under attack by Russian ballistic missiles. Now, earlier, President Volodymyr Zelensky said Ukrainian intelligence had indicated Russia was preparing a new massive strike. This comes ahead of the NATO summit, which will begin this week in Turkey, and President Trump is set to meet there with Ukrainian President Zelensky. Last week, Trump said he was only attending because of a request from Turkey's President Erdogan. Here is Bloomberg's Dan Williams.
I think the Turks will be wondering, and the Russians and the Ukrainians, whether Trump is now looking for an easy win in his terms to close the deal in Ukraine so he can at least hold that up when it comes to the midterms a few months hence, or whether he might knuckle down on the U.S. contribution to NATO, given what he's discovered about the limitation of U.S. force in that war in Iran.
That is Bloomberg's Dan Williams. Now, NATO leaders will likely discuss financial burden sharing in defending Europe. This is something President Trump has repeatedly pushed while ordering the Pentagon to cut U.S. troop levels in Europe. In Iran, it is the second day of a massive funeral for the late Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. This week-long ceremony is expected to draw millions of mourners and serve as a show of strength for the Islamic Republic. Khamenei was killed by an airstrike at the beginning of the Iran war back in February. Oil prices are trading lower after OPEC Plus agreed to another modest increase in its oil quota for the month of August. Seven nations led by Saudi Arabia and Russia will add 188,000 barrels to their daily output target. Here is Bloomberg's Rongwei Neo.
All these are theoretical targets, I would say, because the ultimate physical output would actually depend on how much physical oil these producers can actually drill out and load them onto the ships and bring them out of the straits. And as of now, even though traffic is still resuming, some of the producer countries, especially those that are located more inside the Gulf, may struggle when it comes to getting tankers to lift crude out of it.
At the same time, oil and gas shipping along a U.S.-protected corridor in the Strait of Hormuz shows signs of recovery. On Sunday, six oil and gas freighters were observed navigating a route along the Omani coastline. A federal judge has ordered the Pentagon to give Alibaba a reprieve from a law placing the company on the blacklist for a allegedly aiding the Chinese military. Now, this law took effect last week, and it forced all of Alibaba's lobbyists to drop the company as a client. Nearly 3 weeks ago, Alibaba sued the Department of Defense, saying it does not work for the Chinese military. Today, a judge ordered the Pentagon not to treat Alibaba as a Chinese military company with respect to the lobbying restriction until she resolves the company's motion or 60 days after a court hearing on it, whichever comes first.
Back home, we start with former President Jacob Zuma. On the NDB Sunday show, Lauren Avanthia says Zuma's reported meeting with one of the Guptas in India raises a bigger question about former presidents, state-funded privileges, and political power after leaving office. Here's Lauren Avanthia.
I think this almost sounds like the theme of today's show is how South Africa is run by a criminal enterprise. And I think the only difference with Jacob Zuma is that he's quite open about it, whereas people from other parties try to hide it and try to be a little bit more discreet. He's out here living his best life, doing his thing, not caring about what people think. And we are run by a criminal enterprise, and we'll cover that with the other stories we're talking about today. And He hasn't only visited the Guptas, he's also done other overseas visits to Uganda, the foreign affairs minister said, and I can't remember the other country. So it's interesting, who knows what he's actually up to. As a ex-president, everyone's saying he has a certain responsibility to be more responsible, etc. But he will do what he does and not care about what everyone else thinks. I think this speaks to a deeper issue in our country, a much more systematic issue. Because when you are the president of a country, or South Africa specifically, although this is a practice across the world, when your term is over or when you're done, you continue getting your salary as the president and you continue getting benefits. And you continue getting security, SAP still protects you, etc. And the other problem is that, same in all democracies, presidents also have a finite term that they allow to stand for public office. So it's usually 2 years. And okay, he didn't finish his term, but at the end of the day, he's done. And now we have a loophole in our constitution and a loophole in our system, our political system, that allows a president who's done with their 2 terms hypothetically to now still be in charge of a political party. So he might never be in the role of president ever again, but what is happening, he still has political power. And is that not something that was not necessarily thought about when our constitution was made? Is that not a problem? Is that not perhaps a conflict of interest? Because let's not forget the benefits and the perks. A president gets an extremely high salary and continues getting that salary till the day they die, with all the other perks added to it. And based on that, as an individual who decides to enter politics and eventually work up the ranks and eventually be elected into the highest office in the country, surely a sacrifice you should be willing to make is A, not get involved in any dodgy dealings ever again, and B, not get involved in politics after your terms are over. Your 2 terms are over. And unfortunately, in this country, we're seeing an absolute, just a slap in the face of South Africans with how he's carrying on all over, gallivanting and doing his thing. And also, not only undermining the current government's attempts at diplomatic relations with other countries, not only having meetings face-to-face, friendly meetings with people that are the face of the entire corrupt system that is South Africa, but also wasting state resources.
Next, to markets and artificial intelligence. Semiconductor stocks have come under pressure as investors ask whether the AI infrastructure boom can keep growing at the same pace beyond 2026. Bloomberg's Mike Shepard says the pullback shows some anxiety, even though major tech companies are still planning huge spending on AI. Yes, Bloomberg.
The broad question I have is a rotation underway? How much anxiety is there among investors about the runway that, AI has?
Well, we sure did see a fair amount of anxiety over the past week. The SOX, as we know it affectionately, is down about 10% over the last 5 trading days before the holiday break. And when we look at it, we see that investors really are showing concerns that maybe this big run-up in AI infrastructure spending may not have legs to continue much past 2026, at least at the same pace. Now, what we have to do, though, is we have to look back at the full year of trading in SOX, which represents a lot of the biggest chip makers out there, including NVIDIA and AMD. And others as well. Now, when we look at it over the past year, it's up more than 78%. And that is indicative of, you know, the broad-based belief that AI infrastructure spending not only has legs, but it has some staying power. And that really is also fueled by what we're seeing from the biggest AI developers, the publicly traded ones, at least for now, Alphabet Inc., Meta, and others. They have indicated they intend to continue spending what they've forecast altogether to be $725 billion in 2026 alone, and have indicated that they intend to do more of the same. Some of the heebie-jeebies, though, David, really stem from what we saw OpenAI move to do. We have reporting that they are planning to pull back their IPO until 2027. And that really set people to thinking, maybe this doesn't have as much legs as we had originally thought. But we're going to have to see how the trading plays out come Monday.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes. Bonitas, medical aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
Now back to South African politics. Lauren Avanthia says President Cyril Ramaphosa's appointment of Dina Pule raises uncomfortable questions about accountability, clean governance, and whether the political system keeps recycling people with serious controversies behind them. Take a listen.
She's probably the most controversial appointment in the whole cabinet shuffle that's taken place. So she's already replacing Minister Chalashe, who has a whole lot of scandals around her. So we are replacing one scandalous politician with another scandalous politician. What on earth is the president thinking? In a country full of 40 million adults, more or less, South African adults, can't we find one single person with a clean record to fulfill that role? Can't we find one person with the right qualifications and integrity to fill that role? Can't we find them from somewhere? Doesn't this speak to a deeper issue that this country is held hostage by political parties? And as it's stated in our constitution that we are a multi-party system, is that not our biggest stumbling block to progress in this country? So you can replace multi-party system with criminal gang system. That's what it is. That's what we are ruled by in this country. And the constitution reinforces that system and cuts our hands off. All we can do is go to the ballot box and vote for a different party. And who says that party we vote for is not going to fall into the same traps? Because once you're in the system, are you not going to get drunk with power and do the same thing? So what safeguards are there to prevent this from happening? So with Dina, she's walked a long road. She's been high up in the ANC as a leader in the party itself. She's also been in parliament before. The public protector has almost forced her to apologize for all her lying to parliaments. She has been charged by the Executive Ethics Board. So she shouldn't be nowhere near any political position of power at all. She should be far away from politics. Yet, the president of the country sees no problem in letting her become the Minister of Social Development. It's just an insult to democracy. He's doing his own thing. He's running his own criminal enterprise himself. He's doing what he can to stay in power and doesn't care at all about the people who are suffering due to the lack of governance taking place. Because the people in power right now, the people who have political power, they're not governing the country. They are doing everything they can, A, to stay in power, B, to make sure that they live their best life and they don't care what happens to South African citizens. This government does not work for South African citizens at all, only works for its own self-interest. And it doesn't matter which party is the one in charge currently. So we need a completely different system. We need to decouple politics from governance.
And finally, to the NATO summit in Turkey. Bloomberg's Dan Williams says leaders will discuss defense spending and Ukraine, but the aftermath of the US-Iran conflict is also hanging over the meeting. He says the Strait of Hormuz is still not meaningfully open, and the uncertainty may follow President Trump into the summit. Here's Bloomberg.
It's far from secure, and the more pressure there is on them to see a resumption of energy by shipping companies related to those European countries, covered by the European countries' core suppliers, we may see individual efforts to help them out. What is clear for now is that the Strait of Hormuz, it simply isn't open in any meaningful way. We are just under 3 weeks from when that MOU was signed between Iran and the United States. The core primary objective there was to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, mutually, jointly, by those warring powers that had individually managed to effectively shut it down. What we're seeing now is that is not happening. Now, the shipping industry, certainly when it comes to the insurers backing up those ships, is extraordinarily risk-averse. It would appear that some of those ships have received warnings from the Iranian military to abide by Iranian-defined safe passage routes in the Hormuz. It could be that mines have yet to be cleared, that threats have yet to be cleared there, and and they're simply not ready to take the risk. So in the 3 weeks since what was treated as a breakthrough interim peace deal between those countries, we've had, I think, 3 days in which they exchange blows, exchange fire again. Things are very, very shaky. It's not what anyone had hoped for. And it's clear that really there's much work to be done on the Strait of Hormuz, not to mention the other issues of an eventual hopeful peace deal between Iran and the United States, which would include, obviously, a satisfactory conclusion to the Iranian nuclear program and other military aspects and the like. To judge from the funeral over the weekend for the slain supreme leader of Khamenei, the Iranians are very, very defiant. And it could be that this will also be front of mind for Trump when he walks into that NATO summit in a few days. The way he's been treated, the way his country's been treated by a country that he claims to have beaten on the battlefield. And he has actually expressed resentment during the war for some NATO powers in Europe that he said either didn't deliver assistance or came through too late. I wouldn't be at all surprised if that is also given expression, at least on the sidelines of that NATO summit.
And that's Business Daybreak. I'm Asim Anyute. Thanks for listening. We'll keep track of our matters and leave the noise to everyone else. Cheers.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.